Thank you very much, Kim Gordon. Steve Bertrand here. It is the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. We got a lot going on today. We will talk a little bit later in the program with Suzanne Mushin. As we said, she likes to look at women in the workplace. Andrew Herman, senior editor at DNA Info, will be here as well. But we always start on Tuesdays with John Najarian from CNBC. He joins us on a phone line. You can follow him on Twitter as well, at John Najarian. Keep the H. He doesn't need it. Welcome back to the Business Lunch.
Yeah, the H is my dad, but thanks very much. Great to be with you.
Hey, I want to start, maybe this is a little personal, but you have talked on this program in the past about how you are friends with Anthony Scaramucci.
A guy
who might have joined the Trump administration. I don't know if he still will. He's in the news today and last night because he was the subject of this story that CNN ran and then pulled back that resulted in three editorial workers at CNN losing their jobs or leaving their jobs. Tell me a little bit about that and your reaction to it.
Sure. Well, last week, I believe Thursday last week, CNN reported that Anthony was in contact 4 days, I think, before the inauguration with some members of a Russian team that were going to guarantee some loans to him and to others, as well as potentially negotiating some end to some sort of sanctions against Russia. Anthony tweeted out immediately that was a completely false story, and he called it fake news, much like the president did. And then CNN the next day, or Saturday, I forget which, Stephen, but basically published a retraction, said that story should not have gone out. We apologize to Mr. Scaramucci and blah, blah, blah. And Anthony responded, no harm, no foul. Thank you. You know, it's classy of you guys to basically admit to this being a fake news story. And that seemingly was the end of it until, as you say, CNN basically forced three of their editorial writers out for faking that story. They apparently got an anonymous source that did not have any corroboration, and that was a big problem.
Yeah, I'll take a little issue with you in using the term fake. They got it wrong. They made a mistake. I think fake news are things that people create out of whole cloth and then put it up. If it was fake, they wouldn't have backed away from it because it's all pretend anyway. Here's an example of a news outlet making a big mistake, getting something wrong, and then pulling it back. Is that fair?
Sure, I can go with that. Okay. And Anthony, to my knowledge, I've never seen Anthony be anything but upfront with his dealings with anybody. In particular, since he didn't represent the administration, I would have been really shocked if he was one of the people that was out there trying to get sanctions rolled back or anything else. So somebody got way ahead of themselves
right,
with that story, and it ended up costing several people their jobs at CNN.
I wasn't aware of his reaction, but what a classy reaction it was then after that retraction.
Yeah, I agreed, and I agree with your statement, and I think he felt vindicated, but also was, you know, not looking for a pound of flesh. He said, hey, mistakes happen. Thank you, and thank you for publishing the retraction.
All right, let's go to the news today. A consumer confidence out. America say the job market hasn't been this good or felt this good since 2001. Percentage of consumers who say jobs are hard to get is at a 16-year low at 18%. That's got to be pretty good when it comes to investing in America.
It is, and it's one of the reasons that we see so many people optimistic for the second half of the year from the stock market side of it, which is not always the economy, of course. It's how well stocks will do, not necessarily Joes and Janes in the economy. But I do think, Stephen, that you're going to see Joes and Janes doing a lot better in the second half, that finally some of that demand is going to have to start lifting wages, and that'll be a positive.
So the IMF today sort of revised its projected economic growth for the U.S. from 2.3% down to 2.1%. It was 2.3% in April. And as I read it, they cite that uncertainty over whether Donald Trump and the Republican Congress can deliver on some of what they had hoped to and that might have been good for economic growth. I would imagine this week in healthcare is going to be a big week when it comes to the future of whether they can come through on whether it's taxes or infrastructure or things like that.
You're 100% right. It's important because many of the provisions in the healthcare bill would give them more cover on the tax front as far as either are creating a simpler tax structure and or some of the addressing of the trillions of dollars, up to $3 trillion that are overseas right now, under repatriation, bringing that money back, that would be huge. But in order to do many of those things, they need to get some savings out of the health care right. bill. And we'll see whether or not they have the votes. I don't know if it'll come to a vote this week, Stephen. Certainly McConnell is unlikely to bring it to a vote if he doesn't have it in his pocket. But it might take another week or two before they can actually bring that to a vote.
Well, the fella knows what he's doing. So
yes, he does.
Here's my worry, and I'm all for tax reform and all of that, an infrastructure bill. I'm a little worried, though, that, and I hear this from some in Congress, that they're saying, well, we need to vote on health care to get to the good stuff. And it seems like maybe they're giving the seriousness of the health care debate a little short shrift. They're rushing through it in order to get to the tax reform. Do you see that? Is that a concern for you?
I don't know. I mean, it would be a concern if I was truly believing that, despite the fact that they've been talking about this for years, that this is all brand new to them. I don't really believe that. I think they've had some ideas on how they'd like to address it. And one of the big issues is going to be, of course, how do you basically support both parties that support the pre-existing condition? Right. How do you possibly pay for that when that's no longer really health care, health insurance anyway, because you can't insure for something that already has a pre-existing condition? It goes against the logic of the insurance itself. Doesn't mean we can't do it, Stephen. It just means that's one of the areas that's going to have to be much more modified in order to fit and not bankrupt the system.
It's easy to agree on the good stuff. It's hard to pay for it. That's the hard stuff. All right, we didn't talk too much about specific moves on Wall Street today, but what's your pick? What are you looking for?
Well, there's been a bunch of cyber attacks of Merck, of
right.
Mondelez, of WPP. I mean, a number of companies, not just in the healthcare space, but elsewhere.
I didn't hear that Mondelez was involved as well.
Yep, we just reported that about 30 minutes ago that Mondelez admits they were part of this hacking and or ransomware that people are basically trying to hold these companies hostage to get their access with their customers via the Internet back, whether it's a denial of service attack or whether they've actually hijacked the actual servers remotely. I can't comment on which way they've done it, but apparently it's some sort of ransom attack where they're seeking money for this. And it's even hit a couple Russian stocks. A couple of the big Russian stocks, I think Rosneft and somebody else, were hit by this ransom attack as well. So I think technology, in particular cloud technology, all the more vital for folks. CRM, that's Salesforce.com. That'd be a place that I'd go. Not that they just provide cloud security, but they're one of my number one cloud plays for software.
John Najarian, I love talking to you. I learn a lot. Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Stephen.
Andrew Herman is in the studio. He's executive. Let's make you executive.
Oh, I'm all for that.
Senior editor at DNAinfo.com. Welcome back to the Biz Lunch. All right. So, well, a couple of things. I was in the Pride Parade with my family on Sunday. Great
I saw
time.
That. Yep.
Oh, my God. It's just so much fun. And DNA Info's got a story. We talk about openings and closings, different businesses in Chicago during this segment. And we'll get to a big one coming up. But let's start with this guy, Otis Richardson, who I think I see in the elevator in this building.
He is a Tribune employee.
Yeah.
Yeah. So he is, like you say, he lives in Hyde Park, and he has launched a company called Lavender Pop Greeting Cards, which makes greeting cards for African-American gays and lesbians. And he's a gay black man himself. And you wonder where businesses start. And like so many, this one came out of sort of one of those light bulb ideas. Being gay and black himself, he would be looking for cards to send. And he said most of the cards that he found were, as he puts it, of the porn star order. Sort of too racy for what he was looking for. He wanted cards that were more, you know, about dating and relationships.
Yeah, he's
and
a normal guy and he wanted normal cards.
Right, right. So he started this company. He is an illustrator. He's worked with writers. They start at $3 on his lavenderpop.com website, but he's recently gotten into Whole Foods. And so that is a big step for this small company.
And that's part of the story that I really like. You know, Whole Foods has been in the news being purchased by Amazon, but when they open up, you know, they take local businesses. And I remember when in Englewood, when they, you know, had the job fair or the product fair to try to sell from the community. So he's a guy who's really benefiting from that.
Well, it's kind of an interesting world that he's getting into, because the greeting card market is actually declining. Right, it declines a few percent every year because of e-cards and the internet, and people aren't really used to, you know, finding a stamp and addressing an envelope.
Well, if you think of it, we are sending each other greeting cards in one way or another about a dozen times a day.
Right, but we're not buying them from Hallmark.
We are not doing that.
Now, on the other hand, the gay market is a growing one and a very affluent one. The stats show that the average LGBT household spends about 10% more per year on retail items than non-LGBT.
No kidding. I didn't realize that.
That's right. And so so he's kind of getting into a market that's declining in some ways but growing in another. So we'll see how that goes.
So he's got an attractive market within an unattractive sort of niche.
Right. He's got his niche, and he's going to work that one.
That's not bad. Yeah. All right. I love this Elon Musk stuff. Now, on this show before, I've talked about the Hyperloop, you know, where there's this competition, I think it is, but one of the teams competing wants to build a supersonic train or a 600-mile-an-hour train line from here to Columbus, Ohio. Right? So there's that, and that's Musk is involved in that. But you guys have a story about an underground train from downtown out to O'Hare.
Mm-hmm. So this news broke yesterday. Elon Musk, as you say, the founder of the electric car company Tesla, we found out, actually Cranes broke the story, that the Mayor Emanuel had been talking to him about this high-speed train idea from downtown to O'Hare, and evidently Elon Musk has some sort of tunnel-building technology that he's developed.
Yeah, it's called Boring. It's boring.com.
Right. And so the mayor says perhaps to get this high-speed rail from downtown to O'Hare, maybe you could use a tunnel. Other people have thought, well, maybe you could just add another track, but there's no cost estimate yet. But it's got to be a billion plus, you got to figure.
So he's talking about, you know, using this technology to go down and dig without, it sounds like, disrupting what's above it.
Right.
Well, so the Kennedy could keep going, or the other tracks, or I don't know if you'd go under homes or under streets or whatever, but to build this train.
Maybe under the current tracks. So this thing would get you out to O'Hare in 20 to 25 minutes. It would cost maybe between $25 and $40. You know, right now you have the blue line that goes out to O'Hare, and I was actually on it yesterday, and that's about 45 minutes for $5.
But better scenery than if you're underground.
Well, the thing is about the O'Hare train downtown is that a lot of people don't know about it, and there's not a lot of signs for it, and it's hard to find the station in O'Hare when you're looking for it. So maybe if they boosted that a little bit, the CTA might do a little bit more marketing on that train, more people would use it.
And that's the problem, it's just not being used?
When I talk to businessmen who come to Chicago, they're unaware that there's a train between O'Hare and downtown. Well, so they talk about, well, should I take an Uber, or should I take a cab?
But if you're a businessman, I'm going to take, and it's 45 minutes, I'm going to jump in a car, you know, because you're not saving a lot of time by doing it. And it's something
depending
a little,
on the Kennedy at any given time.
It's a little uncertain. Yeah, I'm all for the tunnel. Let's spend. I'm a spender. Spend big.
Well, I was on the train yesterday, and I sat down next to a woman who had four cats in a box. So,
oh, see,
you
will know, not.
You would not get that.
She's not paying
$40
because
that's
You charge for the cats. That gets really big money.
Very interesting discussion about cats and feral cats, and so that you'd miss that.
Wait, you talked to her?
Well, somebody sat down next to me with a box full of cats. I said, what are you doing?
Yeah, you know what I do?
Excuse me. Why are
there
four cats in your box?
Yeah. I get out of that car.
Yeah, she's very nice. She explained all about fostering cats and how the cats were from Pittsburgh. And I asked her about feral cat colonies.
I'm starting to sneeze a little. I think you still got some dander on you.
Yeah, and then somebody got on with a dog. So, you know, it was really an exciting 45 minutes for me.
I'm going to have to cut you off. Andrew Herman is a senior editor at DNAinfo.com. Will you come back next week?
More animal stories next week.
Kelly Leonard will be along. He's the executive director at Second City Works. He was just out at the Aspen Ideas Fest last week, over the weekend, really. So we'll talk to him about the humor and aging and, well, for all of us, coming to terms with where we are as a society in that. And I think it's kind of fitting, given the Medicaid debate we're having right now over health care. Right now in the studio, Suzanne Muchen is here. She's the co-host of The Big Payoff. You can hear it on WGN Plus, on iTunes. Chances are, really, a cabbie's playing it as you go by. Everyone is playing it all the time. Suzanne, welcome back.
Thanks, Steve.
All right. Can I start a little personal here?
Please.
It's not really it has to do with women in a way.
Great.
If people listen closely, they know that I have also a little travel business. And if you listen really closely, I think I've told parts of this story on the air before, but my first trip was in 2013, and we started with a trip to Ireland. It was a literary tour to Ireland. So as those commercials were running on the air, I think it was like $2,600 or something, and I got an email from a woman named Maria, and she wrote to me, Steve, parts of this email here is what she said. She said, we've been listening to you for years. We can't afford the trip to Ireland that's been on the radio. My daughter passed away last year at the age of 36 from breast cancer. That's so much, way too common. Everyone has it. I'd promised her that one day we'd get back to Ireland before she left, but we never made it. Strange request from me is, can someone, anyone, take her ashes on the trip and scatter them over Belfast, where we come from, or Dublin, or the sea, where she'd rather be? I'll gladly mail off a small container of her ashes to be distributed. My daughter, Feline.
Wow. It's very moving.
Signed by a woman named Maria.
Yeah.
And I was honored by that.
Sure.
Absolutely, that a mother
would
entrust me to do that. And we did it. You know, I checked. We made everything legal. Went to Ireland with the group, Donny Carroll, who I just sent an email to, a buddy of mine in Ireland, set it up and found a place for us to do that.
It's
and I scattered
moving.
Some of
yeah.
the ashes near sort of an abandoned church. Well, this weekend I got an email from George. Steve, you don't know me, but you briefly knew my wife, Maria, when you graciously assisted her with spreading her daughter's ashes somewhere in Ireland on one of your trips. For that, she and I are eternally grateful. I'll try to be short and to the point. In early 2014, so just a year after, in early 2014, Maria was diagnosed with stage 4 metastatic breast cancer, and she fought the battle with little help I could do for her. My beautiful, intelligent wife passed away at 5:50 a.m. on April 9th as I was holding her hand. I guess the point of my email, my notification to you, is simple. I lost two very loved people in my life, and I wish to God that someone finds a cure for breast cancer soon. The journey of seeing two family members succumb to such a devastating disease not only affects them, it affects all family and all friends their lives have touched. A simple comment one day on your show, in memory of Feline and Maria, and also of all of those who've gone through similar life-changing circumstances and losing their loved ones, would be much appreciated. That's all.
Wow.
Signed, George.
Wow.
So there that is. Maria came into my life in a very unusual way and touched it in a way I never would have imagined.
I didn't think that's how that email was going to end when you started to read it. George's email.
Yeah. How did you think it was going to end?
I don't know. I think he was just, I thought he was just speaking on behalf of his wife and how much it meant to her.
Yeah. So I'm so happy that I was able to be part of that, but I'm really grateful to them for, I told him in an email I wrote back, I feel like a member of the family. And so this is that. Look out, find someone who's suffering, going through something today, and give them a little extra. Are you suffering today at all, Suzanne?
Now I am. That was really moving, and I was not expecting that. This is not our usual banter.
I know.
How do we even go from that to, like, I don't know.
Well, let's go to Smith, because we do talk about
Smith
this.
College.
Smith College.
Yep.
And I like this idea, the kids, students, this Smith is an all-women school, right?
It is.
Is that where Hillary Clinton went?
It
undergrad?
Is, yeah. She just gave the commencement speech.
Well, let's bring her in. She's here in Chicago
She's
today.
In the studio.
But they've got a program that says, come on, you're going to fail. Everyone needs to fail. Failure is part of success. And it's kind of the sort of thing our kids' generation needs to learn.
It's a whole course. I mean, this is where we are as a society. We have to acknowledge that we have we're raising a generation of kids, many of whom are under so much pressure in their teenage years, especially when it comes to college and all sorts of social issues, that they arrive at school away, perhaps mm-hmm. for the first time, and literally don't know how to handle any kind of failure. And I'm not even talking about a massive failure. This article was suggesting that some of the Smith students couldn't handle getting a B minus.
Well, my daughter doesn't like chopped onions. I don't think it's wrong for me to make sure they don't serve chopped onions.
It's just, so I'm both stunned that this course is needed and also, well, not so stunned.
No, I'm not stunned at all. Really, though, the great successes are championed by their failures, right? If you look at Steve Jobs.
That's a big mantra. But I also think that failure is a practice. It's something you need to do often, early, ideally and initially, not such a big way that it harms you forever.
I think I'm too afraid to fail sometimes, you know? So I do think we make it hard for kids to fail because we protect them too much.
Yeah.
And we stress that they can't fail.
A quote from one of the researchers who was looking at this program said, the reason for this program is it's a complicated interplay of child rearing and culture, years of helicopter parenting and micromanaging by anxious parents.
Right.
This is the generation where everybody gets a trophy.
And, you know, we've talked about trophies forever. But it's kind of, there is data that it's coming home to roost, right?
Yeah.
They're looking at mental health or stress or things like that.
These girls who were quoted in the article, and there were mostly women, I have to say. They talked about a couple of other high-end Stanford, Harvard. But the focus was really on these women at Smith. And they were all saying it was hard for them to even handle the smallest of tensions.
All right, so you heard that. When your kids come home from their summer job this afternoon,
just you know,
call them a failure.
Totally. Just, you know,
humiliate them.
Humiliate them.
Embarrass
them. A little shame.
Tell them they're a cashier, they'll lose their job.
Right, exactly. That's the new, you go flip burgers.
So there's a new study, right? There's a new study about automation and who's going to lose their jobs.
Who's going to lose their jobs to robots is really the question. And it seems like this is a, you know, far away thing, and it's actually not. So what they found was that women are more than two times as likely as men to lose their jobs to robots, to automation, in part because so many of the jobs that are easily taken over by automation, like being a cashier, 73% of cashiers are women.
Right. So if 97% of cashiers are going to go away, most of them are going to be women.
Which, think about that fact for a second. We're already seeing that. You go to O'Hare, there's no more, you know, there's like one booth now that actually has a cashier.
Right.
But you think about that, 97% of cashier jobs are going to disappear.
And so is this a gender thing?
They said it was, they noted the gender, but they also said that partly it was related to education.
It's a cashier thing, yeah.
That it definitely is that those jobs that require less education are going to be the ones that go first.
Suzanne Muchen, listen to her at WGN Plus, The Big Payoff.
Yes.
Thanks for coming by.
Thanks, Steve.
And you're off for a little trip. Have a great time.
Thank you.
Bring me back at Croissant.
Croissant.
Guys, joking. Kelly Leonard's been at Second City forever. Kind of. And here you are now. Welcome back to the Business Lunch.
Thanks, man. Great to be
tell
here.
Me about this Getting to Yes And podcast that you can hear on WGNRadio.com.
Yeah. So we've been hosting this almost a year now where I get to talk to all kinds of cool, smart academics and thought leaders and business people about what makes them tick creatively.
Yeah, and so was it usually a half hour, hour
half
long?
Hour. It's okay. A half hour tight conversation. This week we just posted a conversation with Seth Godin, who's a marketing genius.
Right.
We talked to Adam Grant, and we're going to talk to Wendy Clark from DDB, who used to be at Coke and is now at DDB. So a lot of cool conversations.
Adam Grant, you can't shake him now. He's everywhere.
He is everywhere, and he practices what he preaches.
So tell me, you just were out at Aspen, right?
Yeah, at the Aspen Ideas Festival.
And what's that about?
It is incredible. So the festival itself starts with a thing called Spotlight Health, and that is where all these great thinkers and politicians and other folks get together to talk about what's going on in healthcare, which, by the way, is kind of a hot topic right now.
Right, I guess.
Don't know if you know.
Right.
So Tom Price was there trying to defend.
How'd he do?
He was not well received.
No.
No.
What does that mean? He was not well received.
So so they have these tents all over the facility. It's a beautiful campus at the Aspen Institute, and his session was packed, and people were watching him being interviewed. They were very respectful,
right?
But people weren't really responding well to his claims that no one was going to get hurt in this new health bill. So he was there. I ran to Senator Christopher Coons of Delaware, ran to Cecile Richards from Planned Parenthood. I mean, it's really stocked with everyone who's everyone.
And you were there to talk about aging and improv and how they fit together?
Yeah, so I got hooked up through Adam Grant with a woman named Aijen Poo.
And well, tell me what, I've lost Adam's title, we should tell people.
Well, Adam is an author.
But I mean the book.
A Give and Take was one of his big books. And then he wrote the book with Sheryl Sandberg right now called Option B.
That's
the big one that's out now. And Adam is an old friend, and he hooked me up with Aijen, who runs an organization called Caring Across Generations. Here's a stat that Aijen laid on the crowd when we were there, which is for the next 20 years, every day, 10,000 people in America turn 65.
Imagine that.
Imagine that.
I remember when they were turning 50.
Right.
You know, and
that
we
are not
deal.
Prepared. There is not enough caregivers. Caregivers don't make enough money. And caregivers need a lot of support. So we have developed a program that's just kicking off now where we're going to provide improv training to caregivers.
Okay, so someone might hear that and say, what the hell does why does a caregiver need to tell jokes to an old infirm person?
Sure, and I think a lot of people associate improv with humor, and that's there because people do need to laugh. But improvisation, also the sort of pedagogy of it, is about creating ensembles. There's an idea that all of us are better than one of us, and a lot of people in these caregiving situations assume the burden is solely on their shoulders, and they gotta get away from that. They gotta understand that there are other family members, there's doctors, there's a lot of people who are the ensemble that need to help take care of someone.
So we've talked about improv before and about the communication value of it, you know, or the yes and value of it, right?
Well,
that's part of the game.
Yeah, that's part of the game. So you have people who are suffering from dementia, and the science tells us right now that saying no to them or trying to block them doesn't make them better. You know what does? Saying yes and. Allowing them, we have a phrase that you should play the scene you're in, not the scene you want to be in.
Right.
So just play the scene with the person, and if that means that you're talking about going somewhere else, explore going somewhere else.
Put yes and in an improv skit so people understand what you're saying.
Yeah, so the idea is if we're having a conversation and we're making this up as we go along, the way this conversation isn't going to be very interesting if I say no to everything you say to me, right?
Right.
you'll never have me back on the air.
I am a dancing hippopotamus.
No, you aren't.
Yeah, that doesn't work.
You're done.
I am a dancing hippopotamus.
Yes, and I love playing with hippopotamuses.
Exactly. And so that's the way it goes, and that's the way you further communication.
Right, and the idea of moving this into a kind of a medical area may seem like a big leap. It's not. And the crowd was so responsive. We actually led a workshop for healthcare professionals where they did a bunch of improv exercises. And then we did a keynote presentation at the end where we did it for a much larger audience. It was pretty great.
And so where does it go from here? What do you do next?
So we're launching in L.A. at the Second City operation out there. Then we're going to bring it to Chicago. And so if you want to go to caringacrossgenerations.com, and if you want more information, they're the organization. But we were there and we're like, oh, we got to buy a domain. So we bought one. It's not up yet.
Right.
Improvforcare.com.
Oh, here's an idea. Here's an Aspen idea. Let's buy a domain.
Exactly. So luckily the Wi-Fi was working and we got that. but yeah, we're probably going to be able to announce something in the next couple months for the Chicago area.
Kelly Leonard, great to see you. See you again soon.
Thanks, Steve.